Thank you, Mr. Chairman, comrades and friends. Let me begin by quoting from a letter which was sent from the West Ham branch of the Communist Party to the West Ham branch of the Socialist Party in February 1943.
Before my time.
I quote, "The Communist Party has no dealings with murderers, liars, renegades or assassins. The SPGB has always followed a policy which would mean disaster for the British working class. They have consistently poured vile slanders on Joseph Stalin and the Communist Party of the Soviet Union, told filthy lies about the Red Army, the Soviet people and its leaders. They have worked to split the British working class and are, in short, agents of fascism in Great Britain. The Communist Party refuses with disgust to deal with such renegades. We treat them as vipers to be destroyed." And that was signed by J. Barker, Secretary of West Ham Communist Party. Well, Mr. Chairman, 40 years have passed since then, and it would seem that Brother Barker's bark was rather worse than his bite, because far from destroying the vipers of the Socialist Party, my opponent's party has spent the last 40 years attempting to dissociate itself from the political principles upon which it was founded. These days, members of the Communist Party think that it's a bit unseemly to remind them of their record of blind and uncritical adulation of Joseph Stalin. Instead of defending Lenin's successor against the vile slanders of the Socialist Party, they shuffle with embarrassment when Stalin's name is mentioned, a bit like Roman Catholics who've been reminded of the Spanish Inquisition. These days, the Communist Party is a mere shadow of the fanatical vehicle for the defence of Kremlin imperialism, which it once was. The pictures of Comrade Stalin have been discreetly taken down from the wall. The talk about the socialist fatherland and the armed Bolshevik road to socialism is confined to those who are too old or too young to know what is expedient. These days, my opponent and some of his fellow Communist Party Leninists are occasionally found indulging in very moderate protestations that perhaps their comrades in the Kremlin are not behaving like gentlemen. You can hear them quite frequently. "Comrades of the Politburo, as fellow socialists, we appeal to you to produce just a few less nuclear bombs to make the world a bit more civilized." And "Comrade Jaruzelski, we would be the last to question your communist credentials. But is it not a trifle unreasonable to lock up and beat up striking workers? And as for you, Comrade Marche, we realise it is only the vipers of the SPGB who want to split the working class. But is it entirely in accordance with the principles of communism that the French Communist Party organises a campaign to expel black immigrant workers from jobs in France? And all of this doubt and questioning and criticism is no bad thing. It is what separates my opponent from the majority of the members of his party, who have never yet taken down the portraits of Stalin from their walls, the ones who still believe in the immense humanity of the dictators of the Kremlin, and who are still out to destroy the socialist vipers who refuse to believe in the false words of the Communist Party's policy statement, The British Road to Socialism, which states, and I quote, "Today, socialism is a reality for all to see. Countries with a population of hundreds of millions are socialist states." But although my opponent has correctly dared to criticise certain of the worst aspects of these so-called socialist states. Although he has made some efforts to distance himself from the dogmatic Stalinism which is the hallmark of the Communist Party, he has never abandoned the political theory which the Communist Party was established to defend and out of which the horrors of Stalinism emerged. My opponent is an advocate of the Bolshevik ideology of Lenin, and it is that position which he must defend in this debate tonight. And against that defence, I am going to argue that the revolutionary outlook of Marx, as endorsed by the Socialist Party of Great Britain and its companion parties in other countries, is fundamentally opposed to the Bolshevik outlook of Lenin, as endorsed by the Communist Party of Great Britain and its companion parties in Russia and Poland and Bulgaria and Czechoslovakia, to name but a few, to name but the worst. I'm going to argue that agreement with the outlook of Lenin means a rejection of the outlook of Marx, and agreement with Marx means a rejection of the outlook of Lenin. So this is a debate about ideas, and let me briefly outline the basic ideas which characterise the political revolutionary theory of Marx. Marxists start from the recognition that there is nothing inevitable about the chaotic mess which the world is in today. We reject the myth that poverty and homelessness and mass starvation and war must always be with us. We dismiss the limited and stultifying conservative belief that there is no alternative, that history can advance no further than the civilization of the bomb and the dole queue. Secondly, the Marxist outlook presupposes that the social problems which face the mass of humanity today are attributable not to the miscalculations of governments or to the fortuity of nature, but arise out of the social system of capitalism, which can never serve the needs of the working class because it compulsively abandons those needs for the sake of the profit of the privileged few who own and control the means of wealth, production, and distribution. Thirdly, the Marxist approach to political change entirely repudiates the traditional capitalist image of the working class as a crowd or a mob who must always live in deference to masters and submission to the laws of the market. The essential factor which differentiates Marxism from all other ideologies is its assumption of the potentiality for those who are currently the victims of history to become its conscious makers. To quote Marx, the emancipation of the working class must be the work of the working class themselves. And it is this crucial factor which makes Marxism a theory of revolution which is unlike all of the old capitalist theories of revolution. Because for Marx, the road to emancipation must be consciously embarked upon by the class which is to be emancipated from wage slavery. And not only did Marx contend that this must happen, not only did he argue that it was a necessity, he contended that it could happen, that it was a possibility. And finally, Marxists are not just in the destruction business, because destruction is the fantasy of the impotent. Emancipation involves more than the escape from the social system which economically enslaves us. Beyond the barriers of capitalism, there is the alternative of socialism. And it is to this alternative that Marxists are committed. And this socialist alternative involves the common ownership and democratic control of the means of living, the factories, the farms, the docks, the offices, the media. These, in a socialist society, must be owned and controlled, not by a class, not by a bureaucracy, not by a state, but by the whole community. Socialism means the rational utilization of the earth's resources for the use of the people of the earth, so that bread will no longer be produced to sell on the market with a view to profit, but will be made for the free access of all humanity, so that there will be no longer a perverse crisis of overproduction of food for the market while 30 million people starve to death each year. Socialism is the rational resolution to these contradictions of capitalism. Now, the opponents of Marxism find it very difficult to argue against this Marxist solution to the various problems, the numerous and insurmountable problems which exist within capitalism. And because they find it difficult, they spend their time and their money abusing and confusing and distorting the principles of Marxism. They talk about Marxist Russia and the Marxist militia in Poland, which locks up trade unionists, and the Marxist president in Zimbabwe, who has declared strikes to be illegal. And why should they not use these sticks with which to beat Marxism? Because after all, Brezhnev, who died yesterday, called himself a Marxist. So does Jaruzelski. So does Mugabe. So did Stalin. So does the Communist Party of Great Britain. And furthermore, the Communist Party endorses the application of these labels to every one of the dictators and regimes and reactionary movements which cares to style itself Marxist. And it is very understandable that workers who are not naive, not gullible, say that Marxism, that sounds very good in theory, sounds very nice as I outlined it just before, but when it is put to the test, all you get is dictatorship and political prisons and bans on strikes and just as many nuclear weapons. And when they hear people who call themselves socialists defending these iniquities, when they hear members of the Communist Party saying that Russian nuclear bombs are all right because they're owned by the proletarian masses, when they hear members of the Communist Party saying that the dictatorship is all right in Russia because the dictators are there to look after the proletariat who never elected them, who can blame workers for treating Marxism with the utter contempt that so many workers do today? But the fact is that it is not Marxism which has failed. It's not Marxism which has been put to the test. It is the Bolshevik theory of Lenin which has been tried. And I intend to contend that that Bolshevik theory has as much to do with Marxism as Ian Paisley has to do with Jesus Christ. Now, it's true that there are many Leninists who would claim to be heirs to both Marx and Lenin, that the two men were sort of partners in a revolutionary double act, and Marx came on first to entertain the troops with theoretical acrobatics, and then Lenin and the Bolshevik magicians came on afterwards to pull a revolution out of the hat and make the theory vanish. And according to this historical myth, Marx conceived the theory and Lenin did the deed. As Palm Dutt of the Communist Party once put it, what Marx saw Lenin achieved. Now, it would be tedious and inappropriate for me to attempt a detailed comparison of the numerous volumes of Marx's collected works and the 42 volumes of Lenin. And neither is it necessary to engage in such an academic exercise. Without doubt, it can be said quite clearly, both Marx and Lenin made observations about society which were both invalid and to some extent limited by their own historical circumstances. But what stands out from any serious comparative analysis of the ideas and actions of Marx and Lenin is that they held different conceptions of revolution and different conceptions of socialism. I've already pointed out that Marx's entire revolutionary thought was dominated by the belief in the historical possibility of the working class consciously emancipating itself. In the Communist Manifesto, Marx clearly explains what a socialist revolution must entail. He says, all previous historical movements were movements of minorities or in the interest of minorities. The proletarian movement is a self-conscious, independent movement of the immense majority in the interests of the immense majority. And note the words, conscious, independent, immense majority. This was the language of a revolutionary who knew what the force of a conscious working class could be. But what about Lenin? In What Is to Be Done, he writes, and I quote, socialist consciousness cannot exist among the workers. This can be introduced only from without. Cannot exist only from without. For Lenin, the idea of workers developing a level of understanding which would enable them to organize for the socialist alternative is as arrogantly rejected as it would be by the most reactionary of Tories. Listen to what he says. If socialism can only be developed when the intellectual development of all the people permits it, then we shall not see socialism for at least 500 years. The socialist political party, which is the vanguard of the working class, must not allow itself to be halted by the lack of education of the mass average, but must lead the masses. Now, what would Marx have said about this elitist notion that workers need a vanguard to get socialism for us, because left to ourselves, such intellectual development is an impossibility? We've no need to guess what Marx would have said, because in 1879, Marx and Engels sent a letter to socialists in Germany dealing with precisely this sort of arrogant vanguardism. They wrote, the emancipation of the working class must be achieved by the working class themselves. We cannot therefore cooperate with people who openly state that the workers are too uneducated to emancipate themselves and must be freed from above. So which are socialists going to accept? Lenin's view that leaders can't hang around waiting for the workers to become politically educated, or Marx's view that socialism must be brought about by conscious workers who reject leadership? And it's up to my opponent from the Central Committee of the Communist Party, after all, to explain that these aren't opposite views at all, they're exactly the same. And this is of no mere academic interest, because this elitism tells us a lot about a party which claims to stand for socialism. It tells us that a Leninist party like the Bolsheviks saw socialist revolution as a process whereby a minority imposes its will upon the unconscious majority. Now, when Marx spoke about this crucial term, the dictatorship of the proletariat, he meant something absolutely different. What Marx meant was the conquest of political power by a conscious working class in order to dispossess the minority capitalist class. He meant the coming to social power of the majority, the dictatorship of the majority. In other words, a democratic transformation of society by the conscious majority, for the conscious majority. But it's quite clear that Lenin's dictatorship was to involve the rule of a minority party on behalf of a politically unconscious working class. This is what the Bolshevik Revolution was. And it is, in fact, what Lenin said the Bolshevik Revolution was. In an article published in the New International in April 1918, Lenin readily admitted that, and I quote, "Just as 150,000 lordly landowners under Tsarism dominated the 130 million Russian peasants, so 20,000 members of the Bolshevik Party are imposing their proletarian will on the mass, but this time in the interests of the latter. And if my opponent is true to the principles of Lenin, he too will favour the imposition of minority dictatorship in the interests of the working class. And if my opponent is true to Lenin's advocacy of the dictatorship of the vanguard, then he will find no difficulty in defending this evening Lenin's statement, which I now quote to you, that there is absolutely no contradiction between Soviet, that is, socialist democracy, and the exercise of dictatorial powers by individuals." Now, Lenin and the Communist Party and my opponent, if he wants to join them, are entitled to believe that the role of the working class must always be that of a follower, that there's always got to be this group of self-appointed leaders to bring about the revolutions. They are, of course, in very respectable company when they think that. Every single capitalist leader bases his arrogant claim to lead upon this essentially conservative belief. And as Engels wrote in his introduction to Marx's Class Struggles in France, "All revolutions up to the present have resulted in the displacement of one definite class rule by another. They've used the majority, they've used the discontent, whether it's been of the proletariat or of the peasantry, in order to bring one minority elite into power instead of another. But," writes Engels, "the socialist revolution is necessarily different." And I quote to you what he says. "The time of surprise attacks, of revolutions carried through by small conscious minorities at the head of unconscious masses, is past. Where it is a question of the complete transformation of the social organization, the masses themselves must be in it, must themselves have grasped what is at stake, what they are going in for. And this is the revolutionary position of Marx and Engels. No socialism without conscious socialists. Sorry if you can't hang around and wait, but that's the only way you're going to get it. No leaders imposing socialism from above. No dictatorships of the apparently enlightened over the unenlightened." But Lenin rejected these principles. Leninists reject these principles because they cannot hang around and wait. The 500 years which Lenin spoke of for socialist consciousness to develop. And so what do you get when you impose a Bolshevik dictatorship in conditions where the material readiness for socialism is lacking. You get a new form of authoritarian state control, as you've got in Russia. You get state capitalism, the rule of capital by a parasitic state bureaucracy, a new ruling class which claims that its exploitation is in the interests of the people it exploits. And members of the Communist Party get very upset when you tell them about this state capitalism which exists in the socialist fatherland. But they only have to look at what Lenin himself had to say in May 1918. He openly stated, and I quote, "State capitalism would be a step forward if in approximately 6 months' time state capitalism became established in our republic. This would be a great success and a sure guarantee that within a year, socialism will have gained a permanently firm hold." And a year later, when state capitalism had become firmly established in Russia, what did Lenin then have to say about socialism? He said, and I quote again, "Socialism is nothing else but a monopoly of state capitalism instituted for the benefit of all the people, and by virtue of that, ceasing to be a capitalist monopoly." And that, to this day, is the Leninist position. State capitalism is socialism. Socialism is capitalism run in the benefit of the people. If Lenin was alive today, he'd be a sure candidate for the SDP. A worker being employed by the Ford Motor Company, according to the Communist Party, is being exploited in accordance with Marx's theory of surplus value. But of course, a worker producing cars in a Russian factory, a worker producing ships in a Gdansk shipyard, who hasn't even got the opportunity to form a trade union, which his employers do not run, whose surplus value is being stolen away by the dictatorship which he has had no say over electing, oh well, of course, according to my opponent, he's not being exploited at all. He's a free citizen of a socialist state. To be kind to my opponent, I may say that such reasoning is the product of the most profound mental confusion. To be rather less kind and more frank, I would suggest that the Leninist conception of socialism is a fraudulent masking of the tyranny of state capitalism behind the rhetoric of Marxism. Mr. Chairman, in conclusion, my opponent has a lot to answer for, and I'm not going to detain him much longer. He has to answer for the fact that his party has repeatedly urged workers to elect anti-working class Labour governments. He has to answer for his party's various positions in relation to the last world war, including its support for the so-called communist pact with the Nazis. He has to answer for the fact that the Daily Worker was the first newspaper in Britain to express support, unequivocal support, for the barbaric atomic bombing in Japan. He has to answer for Budapest and Prague and the crushing of Solidarity. He has to answer for the racism of his comrades in France and the nationalism of his fellow import controllers in Britain. These policies are the legacy of Leninism, which he must defend. But above all, it is the duty of my opponent to deny the possibility that a majority of workers, without following leaders or accepting dictatorships, can take conscious and democratic action to immediately establish a propertyless, moneyless, wageless, stateless society. He must deny that. And if my opponent admits that that possibility of such a social revolution that the world has never before seen, if he admits that that could happen, that it's worth organising for, that it's something on the cards now, then he betrays the political principles of Lenin. And let's be in no doubt whatsoever, it is only out of such a betrayal that the victory of socialism can be won.
Yeah, that's fine, that's fine.